y'all. Welcome to Pre-Dead Boys. It's a podcast where we talk about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. What's up, Max?
There we go. How you doing, Dorian?
Good, man. I can actually speak on this third take through trying to start our podcast.
Well, you mean get your words out correctly, because you were just talking about how you blew your voice out, so.
That's true. So hopefully we'll be able to make it through this.
Crawling towards the finish line by the end of this one.
Yes. So like I said, we always talk about death and morbid stuff, but we have fun with it.
Yeah.
And Max is going to walk us through this. Max, what do you have for us today?
It's really more of a question of what I have for you, Dorian. How about you go ahead and reach on under that couch? This is a bad one.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry.
This is already the weirdest gachapon ever. All right.
I don't know where it is under there. Oh.
Is it wet?
It's wet.
Oh, God. What are you doing to me? I need to move the... Oh, this is an ice cube.
It's an ice cube.
That's it?
Yeah, it's ice. I've, like, basically ruined the carpeting in my basement for this podcast. Well, the issue was I shoved a bunch of ice cubes under my couch, and then we talked about hardcore music for 45 minutes.
So these have just been melting under your couch for hours.
Hours. Excellent. Which is another nice tie-in. Thank you for providing that segue. Because we're going to combine time, and we're going to combine ice.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about cryonics.
Ah.
And what happens when you freeze a body with the intent of living in the future.
Oh. Cryonics? Is that the term?
Cryonics is the technical term. Cryogenic freezing is the popular term.
Right.
Cryogenics is the science of getting things down to a really, really cold temperature. But cryonics is the term for how do we freeze people safely.
Okay, interesting.
So it's easy to picture it as having the whole like Futurama, white coat, nice safe tube bent. But that hasn't always been the case. And it turns out that when you give a bunch of people a lot of money to sit around and make sure that some big metal tubes don't stop working, it turns into a little bit of impropriety.
I'm excited today.
Which is going to be very fun.
Yes.
So without further ado, let's crack into this topic with some appropriately frosty and cold LaCroix. It's the pre-dead boys crack into the topic. Still not sponsored by LaCroix fully, but boy, we better get our money.
Just
soon.
A couple of Croy boys waiting for royalties.
Royalties.
Hit us up.
So, cryonics is a bit of a misunderstood field. It's not the study of making sad robots. You get it? Like bionics, but instead of bi, it's cry.
Cry, yeah, I got it. I see what you did there.
Okay, well, you didn't really laugh as hard as I did.
It's because I'm disappointed in you. You need to go to your room. Think about what you've done.
So, straight from the horse's mouth, here's the definition of cryonics from the Cryonics Institute, whose website is a really nice flashback to the internet of 2005. So how about you just scroll on down from that very rude picture that I put at the top of your document? Can you describe it? It's very funny.
Yeah, Max has started off the show notes with a really great JPEG of what appears to be a skeleton bursting out of the back of my computer to... give me the finger, and I think he's under red and green, like, black lights.
It's so good. The skeleton is so rude.
I'm thinking of throwing away our podcast artwork and just seeing if we can get the rights to this,
honestly. Get the rights to the skeleton?
It's so good.
Also, as a fun throwback to our mummy episode, you'll notice that skeleton does not have eyeballs. Its eye sockets are empty.
Very...
rendering it worthless.
Yeah, very ugly. Yeah. Count on me posting this several times on Twitter and Facebook. It will happen.
So let's officially break off the cryonics definition from the Cryonics Institute.
Cryonics is a technique intended to hopefully save lives and greatly extend lifespan. It involves cooling legally dead people to liquid nitrogen temperature, where physical decay essentially stops, in the hope that future scientific procedures will someday revive them and restore them to youth and good health. A person held in such a state is said to be a cryopreserved patient, because we do not regard the cryopreserved person as being inevitably dead.
Yeah. So do you notice anything here, have any questions about the process so far?
What do they mean by legally dead?
That is a huge issue with cryonics and has caused a fair amount of controversy between the cryonics community and the United States government. A big thing to note is that legally, you cannot be alive when you are placed in cryonic suspension. Because cryonics is a non-guaranteed solution, the United States government believes that to place a non-clinically dead person in cryonic suspension is tantamount to murder.
Yeah?
Yeah,
I mean, like, you're just freezing someone to death.
Like, if you were alive, you would be dead.
Right.
So, because of this, as the Cryonics Institute stated, a person has to be clinically dead before the cryogenic preservation process can begin. So, typically, you have to die in a hospital because of the massive amount of equipment that's required to pull off the transportation and freezing process.
Right.
So, if you want to have a natural death at home, surrounded by your loved ones, that's not really necessary. But also, if you've paid a bunch of money to have your body immediately frozen upon death, that's probably not exactly your jam anyway.
Yeah.
So, once you die, you're in your hospital and you're on your deathbed, and you can basically die from whatever, and cryonics believes that it can fix you in the future. So, when you're in a hospital and you're hooked up to all these machines, once they flatline and you're legally declared dead, representatives from your chosen organization all of a sudden just descend on your body like vultures and will start to pack your body in ice to get your temperature down as low as possible. So that's basically to stop you from decaying.
Okay.
And they also take a syringe full of an anticoagulant and they shoot that into your blood to prevent your blood from congealing. Yeah. As it stops flowing. Because even if you have a cut and some blood gets on the ground, it'll congeal, coagulate.
It clots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't want that happening inside your body because your heart isn't beating anymore. So another thing that they'll do sometimes is they'll put you inside of this machine that kind of looks like a battering ram.
Okay.
And they'll slip you inside of it after you've died, and it's a big piston that pushes down on your chest and compresses your heart just to keep your blood flowing, but you're also covered in ice and legally dead at this point. So it's really, really weird.
That's so weird. So it's like an iron lung, but...
for your heart.
Okay. And also, you're already dead.
Yeah.
What a weird... Okay, my perception of cryogenics, or cryonics, if you will, was that... you were still alive. You were volunteering to go into it while you're alive.
Yeah, Futurama.
Yeah.
You step in the tube and freeze.
Yeah, that makes sense. You haven't died yet. But they're basically just, they're rolling the dice, believing that someday we'll figure out the cure for death.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
bold move.
Yeah, it's a whole big thing where they think they can undo anything bad that has happened to you in life.
I mean, I don't want to be the jaded one here, but that's very overly optimistic.
It's a tall order. So after they do this, they're going to take your body to your chosen cryonic facility. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say body. If anyone here is really into cryonics, sorry, because they actually don't say body. Because a body implies that you're dead, which they don't believe. There's a whole semantic thing we'll get into later.
Sure. You're legally dead,
legally
Max,
dead.
But not really dead.
Not really. So they're going to take you to your chosen facility. Now, there's three of these in the United States. There is the Cryonics Institute near Detroit, Michigan. There is Alcor Life Extension in Scottsdale, Arizona. And there's the American Cryonics Society in Cupertino, California. So, like, it's goofy that two of these three are in very hot places.
Detroit, though, that's pretty chilly.
Detroit gets cold. It's very cold in the D.
It gets cold in the D.
Now, if you're also looking for a cold place, there's one called Cryorus in Russia. I think it's in Moscow, and I think it's cold there.
Cryorus. I get it.
Cryo-Russia.
They just dunk you in a mountain. That's all they do.
They throw you in the Eurasian?
We'll fact check that later, I guess. Whoops.
Whoops. So... once you arrive at your final destination, which is debatable if it's actually your final destination or not, they can't just throw you in a thing of liquid nitrogen. The reason you can't just chuck a body in a big tube of liquid nitrogen is the same reason you can't put a can of delicious LaCroix in the freezer. When water freezes, what does it do?
It explodes that can of LaCroix is what it does. Yeah. As the water expands.
The water expands.
And the sweet can of LaCroix that keeps that sparkly goodness contained, it's going to blow up. Thank you for putting this in terms that I can actually understand.
So on a molecular level, that's exactly what happens. So all of your cells, all the cells in your body contain small amounts of water. So when you get really cold in sub-zero nitrogen temperatures, those cells will form little ice crystals, and the pointy bits of the crystals will rupture your cell walls and cause them to explode, which I guess kills you more than you already are dead.
Well, it helps you deteriorate faster, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And I guess if you like weren't already legally dead before, this definitely kills you. But we're getting into a lot of really theoretical ice freezing territory here.
You're dead. Yeah. I mean, it's a stretch at this point. It was a stretch a long time ago, but go ahead.
So to protect from this happening, the cryonics team pumps a cryoprotectant into your body. Basically, they pump you full of antifreeze. It's a natural antifreeze. It's not the bright green stuff that you're not supposed to leave in your garage.
What's a natural antifreeze?
There are fish that live in very cold areas, and they'll live in like a lake in Russia or something. And the lake will freeze in winter, but the fish have a thing in their blood that prevents their blood from freezing so that their cells don't rupture and they die.
Yeah, okay, interesting.
These companies have synthesized a version of this that they can pump into your blood to prevent it from freezing, which is some fancy chemistry that's on some crazy next level and is very cool. But it basically allows you to be put in suspended animation in this big tank of liquid nitrogen.
Okay. So you don't look like Bane from the really corny Batman movie where he had the green tubes.
Yeah.
Because honestly, that would look pretty cool.
It would be very cool.
But you would die. But only then would you die.
Only then. You're not dead before.
Only when the antifreeze is coursing through your veins.
Yeah.
Not the point when you, you know, are dead, but after that.
After that. They slap you on a big bed of dry ice and then slide you on that thing of dry ice into a sleeping bag, which they slide into a container, and then they slide that big metal container into a bigger tank full of liquid nitrogen, which they call either a neuropod or a whole body pod.
Okay.
Did you catch anything there? Neuropod and whole body pod?
No, is this another word joke? Is this another pun?
It's not a joke. So a whole body pod.
Wait. Neuro like brain.
Uh-huh.
So it's, they will freeze just your brain.
They will cut your head off and just freeze your head if you want that.
So it is like Futurama.
Yeah, it's just like Futurama. So if you're stored as a whole body, they'll store you upside down so that if the bottom of the tank springs a leak, they'll have time to repair it before everything drains out of the bottom of the tank. Thus, your brain is preserved, because that's the important part.
Right.
The whole thing is that if we're going to be enough in the future that we're able to reverse the aging process, cure every disease, we'll pretty much be able to clone a new body out of whatever tissue you have left behind from just your brain. So that's the really important part.
The brain is the raw materials. I see.
So there's a short documentary out that's really cool, and it's titled We Will Live Again, and it's all about cryonics. It's available for free on Vimeo, and so we'll link to it in the show notes. But I thought it would be interesting to watch it really quick, as it is short, and it's pretty helpful and neat to see what the inside of one of these facilities is like.
Watch We Will Live Again.
It's like 10 minutes. If you want to pause this, or we can just keep it going. And
I'll edit it out. It's all good.
That's We Will Live Again. Do you have any thoughts or comments on that?
A lot.
Yeah. It's heavy. It's a pretty unflinching look at what this very medical process is like.
Yeah. It's interesting. They have a lot figured out in terms of the science of what is likely to preserve a body, but it's still just such a big unknown. And yeah. I think I have to just acknowledge something that's going to be a bias for me is this sounds crazy to me. This sounds like completely unreasonable and unachievable that we would be able to revive these bodies. Maybe that's cynical, you know, and I'm open to being convinced otherwise, but it's still just a roll of the dice. It's still just a total gamble.
Yeah.
As to whether any of this will work at all or be worth it.
And they say that in the documentary. They're like, I'm not promising anybody anything.
Yeah.
It's just a chance.
Right.
It's an opportunity. And that's really strange. They're definitely not embracing death. They're trying to keep it as far away as they can and have this opportunity to come back.
Yeah, and maybe that's part of what I struggle with is my spiritual beliefs in an afterlife.
Yeah.
I think that for me, personally, death is just kind of part of life.
Yeah.
That is an inevitable conclusion. And it seems like you have to have some kind of denial to some degree to put stock into cryonics that, no, we'll figure it out. We'll figure out how to live longer. But even still, like Edinger acknowledged, we're not promising you're going to live forever.
Yeah.
You're just going to extend your time.
Yeah.
That's so wild, and I don't know how worth it would be to extend that time too, you know?
Yeah.
Who's to say that if you are brought back to life that it would be a life worth living, you know?
You come back in a better world or something like that. I don't know. I'm a cynic, so.
Or a worse world.
Yeah.
It's horrifying.
Yeah.
And you wish it didn't happen.
Yeah.
We're just two cynical boys talking about why you should not freeze your body.
Yeah. And we'll get into some of the more ethical stuff that they deal with later. Again, I really encourage you to check this documentary out because it's very well made. And you get to see maybe the most horrifying heart-pumping machine that I've ever seen in my life.
It's violent. It's a violent heart pumper.
The 12-minute documentary is worth watching for the big machine that they put a body into and then squeeze it with a plunger. Yeah. Alone.
It is a very gorgeously shot documentary, and those interviews are fascinating.
Yeah.
You talk with people who, this is their life. They're putting stock into the science working.
Yeah.
At one point. It's very interesting.
You forget, too, that it's just this dude's job.
Like,
it's this guy's job to maintain this facility.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of shots of this warehouse that's just full of these big nitrogen-filled tubes, and then there's a single green couch sitting there, and it's very...
yeah.
It's jarring almost, but really, really interesting. So let's move out of the overview and into some of the nitty-gritty of cryonics. Dorian, can you name any famous people who have been cryogenically frozen?
Walt Disney?
He wasn't. He
Damn.
Was he was cremated and interred like a boring normie dork.
What about Richard Nixon? He was in Futurama as a frozen head, right? Or a suspended head?
Yeah, Richard Nixon was cryogenically frozen.
Oh.
In... a bunch of money, I think. Just a big money pit.
Probably.
Have you heard of James Bedford?
I've heard the name. Who's James Bedford?
Oh, have you? Because the only reason James Bedford is really notable is because he was the first person to scientifically be frozen.
Okay.
As opposed to, like, Otzi the Iceman, who just was an old cave dude who fell in a big piece of ice and was like, oh, no, and then died and got frozen.
Right.
Or Encino Man. I wanted to put... a copy of Encino Man under there instead of ice, but I couldn't find a copy of Encino Man, so...
You just send me a link and say, we're going to watch this documentary, and it's Encino Man.
So James Bedford was a professor who died of cancer, and he was preserved in 1967, which means he just passed his 50th anniversary of being frozen. Which is crazy. It seems like such a futuristic thing.
Yeah.
But we have people who have been frozen...
for 50 years.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
In these scientific facilities that are specifically built to freeze you.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people have checked in on him over the years to make sure that the science is sound and his body isn't decomposing or breaking or something like that. And he seems like he's doing all right. So, what I have here is a letter written in 1991... to Dr. Bedford, the revived Dr. Bedford,
right,
by Mike Darwin, who is the former president of the Alcor Life Extension Group, where Bedford is preserved. They opened his capsule in 1991, so almost 30 years after he was frozen, just to see how everything was going. A bit of backstory, Bedford was originally stored in a different cryogenic facility, and then they lost power... and were located in the middle of a desert.
Ooh,
so they had to, like, rush his body out of there and store him in a different place. But while they were moving him, he was stuck in this really malfunctioning tube. And people were like, I don't know if he made it through that. If not, oops.
Was this in Arizona?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whew. I was very anxious about what we would find when we opened the Galiso unit. You had been enclosed and shielded from view in that Dewar for just over 21 years. Indeed, you were welded into it. What were the odds that you had never been allowed to warm up during the years of storage in the badly malfunctioning cryocare unit? What were the odds that your doer had been faithfully serviced during the years you were at Galasso and subsequently when you were being cared for by your son and daughter-in-law? Never letting a doer run dry is not an easy thing to accomplish. Deliveries must be carefully scheduled around holidays and so on. I must confess, pessimist that I am, I felt the odds that your condition was good were pretty slim, if good is ever an adjective to use to describe a straight frozen patient. I cannot describe the feeling of elation I had when I peeled back the sleeping bag that enclosed you.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second.
Yeah.
The fact that they keep saying sleeping bag, I didn't really understand it until I watched that documentary for the first time and saw that they were just putting these people in, like,
literally
North Face zip-up sleeping bags.
Right.
It's remarkable.
Yeah.
Like, the distinction between highly scientific liquid nitrogen tanks and sleeping bags that we're putting a dead person in.
Which, I guess, this is kind of fringe science, right? I mean, yeah. This is not...
It's not proven. Mainstream. It's not proven.
So, I mean, what else would they use, you know?
It's basically just the opposite of that technology that Pizza Hut debuted to keep your pizza warm as it was delivered to you.
Yeah. Keeps your human pizza cold.
The human pizza we all are.
We're all but ghosts in the pizza. Deus ex pizza.
Pizza.
That needs some work. I cannot describe the feeling of elation I had when I peeled back the sleeping bag that enclosed you and saw that you appeared intact and well cared for. What's more, that the water ice that Nelson had said was left on you when you were transferred to dry ice was still there and unmelted. Whatever else had happened, you've remained frozen all these years. Few things in my life have satisfied and elated me more completely than has that knowledge. I would like to think that my actions have been important in getting you to the tomorrow that you and we so hope for. History will be the judge of that.
So this letter written to future Bedford, there's a lot of prose in it. It's very flowery. It's very well written.
Yeah.
Which is good, assuming Bedford wakes up and reads this letter. He's going to want to hear something good and not, yeah, we popped your tube open and we were like, oh, geez. Ugh.
A stinky boy.
Now, there was a more medical evaluation done on Bedford's body when they opened the tube in 1991. And it's a little more pessimistic, I guess. A little rougher. If you scroll down, you'll be able to read that as well.
This sounds a little more my speed.
Yeah, it's a little more brutal.
External visual examination discloses a well-developed, well-nourished male who appears younger than his 73 years. The position of the patient's head precludes careful examination of the skin for puncture marks on the left side. There is frozen blood issuing from the mouth and nose. A smear of bright red blood covers the skin around the nose and mouth in a pattern which appears to have been defined by a respirator mask. A larger quantity of darker red blood appears to have flowed out of the mouth during freezing to dry ice temperature, as it retains the folds and contours of the wrapping material which presumably covered the patient's face during freezing. The eyes are partially open, and the corneas are chalk white from ice. The nares are flattened out against the face, apparently as a result of being compressed by a slab of dry ice during initial freezing.
In that video, they kept just showing them hucking dry ice onto this body, kind of irreverently.
Right onto the head.
Right on the face.
Yeah.
If, as you say, they're not dead, they're just metabolically challenged, I'd feel like a jerk if I was throwing
just
a big slab
face.
Of ice. Yeah,
with that ice. Close examination of the skin on the chest over the pectoral area disclosed sinuous features that appear to be fractures.
Ooh.
Subsequently, two small samples of skin were secured from the edges of one of these fractures with the gentle use of a wood chisel.
So they just had to knock some skin off this dude, and they were like, oh, we have a chisel. Let's just start chipping away at it.
Also, this wouldn't happen to be a similar process as what we just saw, where they have a machine violently pumping around the pectoral area. I wonder how that area got fractured.
It's because someone was apparently just giving CPR and was really leaning into it.
Someone or a machine was giving violent CPR to a brittly frozen dead body.
Oh,
okay, I'm a little cynical.
They don't do it to the frozen body. They do it to a very fragile old man. They do that to a fragile old man's rib cage.
Okay. Not much better, but I'll accept it.
So they gave the body this this once over. There's a lot of blood just gooshing out of this body, from what it sounds like. And since I know you nasty, I looked up the thing I know you're thinking about right now. And if you'll scroll down, you'll get to read the sentence that is the really stellar sentence of this whole thing.
The genitals are not visible due to the presence of unmelted water ice, which anchors the plastic film.
Freaks.
Nasty.
I like that they really noted that. They were like, we were really, really curious about that one. You know, the Seinfeld episode about shrinkage had been on the night before, and we wanted to see how that
went. Now, wait a second. What happens if you're cryogenically frozen?
I was in a pool! But they were like, aw, there's unmelted water ice.
Thank you for answering all of my genital-related questions, Max.
No problem. I did that to specifically butter you up a little bit, because right now, I'm going to talk about baseball.
Damn it. All right.
So, the blessed new baseball season is upon us,
It's
glorious. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention Ted Williams.
Okay.
So, Ted Williams is one of the greatest hitters in baseball history. He compiled a lifetime .344 batting average.
Great at hitting the grave.
Oh, well, he didn't hit a grave, as we'll soon see.
Oh.
He had an on-base percentage of .482, which means he was on base almost 50% of the times he came to the plate.
Yeah.
And he had crazy power for the time he played. He hit a 502-foot home run at Fenway Park at Boston. And what they did is they took the seat that the ball hit and they made it red to mark that home run.
Okay.
He had this really beautiful swing. It was incredible. It was really gorgeous.
I'm editing out every second of baseball stats.
Yeah. Well, you won't, because I gave you some good stuff in here, because Ted Williams was just a big jerk. He was a terrible, terrible dude.
Really?
Like, I'm sure he was nice to his family and stuff, but on the field, he was probably one of the worst people you could encounter.
Oh, man.
This is a little unrelated, but to illustrate, it's my favorite Ted Williams anecdote.
Okay.
And it comes from the incredible baseball memoir called Ball 4 by Jim Boughton. If you scroll down, you'll be able to read that. I'm really excited for you to do this.
Ted Williams, when he was still playing, would psych himself up for a game during batting practice, usually early practice before the fans or reporters got there. He'd go into the cage, wave his bat at the pitcher, and start screaming at the top of his voice, "My name is Ted fucking Williams, and I'm the greatest hitter in baseball!" He'd swing and hit a line drive. "Jesus H. Christ himself couldn't get me out!"
It's incredible.
And he'd hit another. Then he'd say, "Here comes Jim Bunning, Jim fucking Bunning in that little shit slider of his. Wham! He doesn't really think he's gonna get me out with this shit. Blam!"
Ted fucking Williams.
Woo!
Baseball rules. There's a band that some of the guys from REM formed after REM broke up, And it's called The Baseball Project, and they just release songs about baseball, and it's incredible. But they have a song about Ted Williams, and it's just called Ted fucking Williams.
That's pretty tight. I like this guy.
Makes me very happy.
Yeah.
So, legendary jerk, but also legendary for being frozen. If you look at his baseball reference page, for every player it says buried and then gives the location that they're buried, if they've died.
Sure.
For Ted Williams, it says buried and then in all capital letters, frozen. So he was frozen. Here's an excerpt from the book The Kid by Ben Bradley Jr. It's pretty much the best Williams biography out there, and it details how his whole freezing went down.
Inside the Alcor operating room, it took 5 or 6 people to lift Ted out of the Ziegler box, the airtight metal container that airlines require for shipping bodies, in which he'd arrived. Under instructions from Alcor, a Florida mortician had filled the box with ice, a cryonic staple applied to the body immediately after death in order to keep it as cool as possible and to help preserve vital organs. The technicians then started to drain blood and water from Ted's body in what Alcor called a washout, replacing them with glycerol and another cryoprotectant known as B2C, which was used for the head only. Then, using a perforator, a standard neurological tool that looks like an electric drill, a surgeon and his assistant bored 2 small holes on either side of Ted's skull so that the surface of the brain could be examined during the perfusion process to guard against swelling. Small wire sensors were inserted into each hole to be used to detect cracking of the skull during the freezing process later. Soon, the surgeon announced that he was ready to perform the cephalic isolation. This meant Ted Williams' head was now ready to be cut off. The surgeon took out a carving knife and began to cut, starting below Ted's neck, slicing through tissue and bone, working his way down through the sixth cervical vertebrae at the top of the spine. At one point, going slow, the surgeon remarked that he wished he had an electric knife. Finally, he switched to a bone saw to finish the job, and at 9:17 p.m. Mountain Time, the head of the greatest hitter who ever lived had been sliced off.
That last sentence is so good, it should win awards.
Just that sentence alone. Thanks for specifying the time zone, too.
Yeah, it felt very helpful. I really appreciated that was included in the book.
The details make it.
I imagine it must have been really weird for the surgeon who, if he grew up watching baseball and if he knew who Ted Williams was like, oh man, Ted Williams, he rules. I have his baseball card in between the spokes of my bike and I'm really excited. I like try and replicate his swing in my little league and stuff like that. And then...
yeah, well, I have his fucking head.
I cut his head off. What's up? It's really goofy.
That's so cool.
But as mentioned earlier, once you are frozen, you just kind of sit upside down in a tube.
Yeah.
So this Ted Williams thing brings up some accusations, some would say unfounded, made by pathological liars, and controversies with some of these cryonics organizations, particularly with Alcor. And, uh-oh. You know, I don't want to get slammed for saying bad things about Alcor, and I hope they don't take us to court. But there have been a lot of accusations thrown at Alcor over the years about a lot of questionable things that they've done.
Well, we're not slandering Alcor. We're just reporting on the information that we've been able to dig up with the research.
Yeah.
Our bases are covered. Don't at us.
Hey, bases covered.
Oh, damn
it. It's a fun baseball thing. Look at you.
I didn't even mean that.
So the next excerpt I have here is from a Sports Illustrated article about some of the controversy that surrounded Ted Williams' choice to be frozen. Because understandably, people were up in arms about this.
Right.
There was controversy within his own family about if he actually intended to be frozen or not.
Oops. Yeah. I thought I was signing the check for dinner, but looks like I'm going to get frozen.
Well, you goof about that, but that's kind of what happened. I don't believe that his wish to be frozen is in his will. The only thing that was produced is like a cocktail napkin.
Whoa.
That he wrote with his two children that says, "Our hope is to all be frozen together so that we may be reunited one day in the future." And they all signed it. And this is the document that went through all these legal proceedings to figure out what to do with Ted Williams' body.
Wow.
Yeah. So how about you hit us with this Sports Illustrated article and we'll see what some of this other questionable stuff was.
Williams' body is not resting upside down in a liquid nitrogen tank at Alcor, as has been reported. Instead, his head is stored in a liquid nitrogen-filled steel can that resembles a lobster pot. The silver NeuroCan, as it's known at Alcor, is marked in black with Williams' patient ID number, A1949. His head has been shaved, drilled with holes, accidentally cracked as many as 10 times, and moved among three receptacles. The beheaded body of Williams is in the same room, resting upright in one of nine liquid nitrogen-filled, 9-foot-tall cylindrical steel tanks that Alcor staffers refer to as Dewars, a wink at scotch-making barrels. Williams is in tank number 6. One Alcor board member has talked with ghoulish humor about using the body as a, quote, bargaining chip, end quote, to collect $111,000 that John Henry Williams, Ted's son, still owes from the original $136,000 bill to put Williams in cryonic suspension.
Yeah, it gets weird.
Yikes.
So, Ted Williams' head has apparently been treated pretty roughly over the years.
They just drop it down some stairs on accident?
A little worse than that. Some of these accusations come from some less than reputable sources, as I mentioned earlier, but there are rumors, that some lab employees at Alcor may have used the severed head of Ted Williams.
Oh no.
As a baseball.
I was so afraid you were going to say that.
Yeah, there's talk that that happened and that a large wrench was used as a baseball bat.
No!
And that might explain some of the fractures.
I hope
that's not true because it's horrible and I love Ted Williams and I think his contributions to baseball were really cool.
Also, he's a human being and you shouldn't do that that's to true. Human beings.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
But I guess if this whole thing is like, oh, we'll keep his brain and then just clone him, I guess you can smack the skull around with a wrench. It still feels not great.
But the skull protects the brain.
Oh, wait.
You gotta not crack the skull 10 times if you want to protect the brain.
Your skull's not on your tummy. Oh, no. Wait, why am I doing this? I need to close this down and update some research here. So, yeah, some kind of questionable medical ethics here. But I was surprisingly pleased to know that at least when Ted Williams was frozen, it only cost $136,000 to get frozen, which seems cheap.
Less than a house, depending on the house.
You could get a real foreclosed house for a little less than that. Or you could live forever in the future.
Your choice, listener.
So groups like Alcor, their attitudes towards people and bodies fluctuate kind of wildly. So on one hand, since they believe that there will be a way to reverse the aging process in the future, cure all disease, or clone entirely new bodies in the future, they're not super concerned with preserving things other than the brain.
Right.
So when we were talking about James Bedford earlier, the first guy to get frozen, he wasn't treated with that modern antifreeze that they have to put in people. So chances are, the second he hit that dry ice, all his blood froze.
Right.
And all his cells ruptured, and there's no way to actually bring his physical body back.
He is a blood clot now.
He's a huge blood clot, and the only viable thing is somehow to hope that his memories or soul or personality is up in his brain, and that that'll be able to be brought back somehow.
What a bummer.
Yeah. So Alcor has had their fair share of other controversies. And this next part is going to play into this weird distinction that they draw between life, suspended animation, and death.
Today, cryonic suspension patients are legally dead, not alive, not in between, but dead. How we as cryonicists think of our patients has absolutely no influence on this label. We have to remember it is merely a label, and labels can be changed, but until we can prove that cryonic suspension patients have a high likelihood of being revivable, we have to play the game from that viewpoint. This label of dead creates both problems and opportunities for us.
It's some real, like, forward-thinking tech guru-sounding stuff. It creates both problems and opportunities. Death.
Tim Robbins would be proud. Dead bodies are considered by most people to be empty husks, only fit for discarding.
Or using as a baseball.
That too. The assumptions have always been that death is the reverse of life and that life cannot be reclaimed. While it seems clear to us that this is likely to be untrue, we are forced to deal with the reality that people whose minds may be closed to this idea are the ones in charge of society. One consequence of this attitude is that dead bodies, quote unquote, whether belonging to cryonicists or not, can be autopsied with no thought of endangering a continued life.
I would just like to point out, we do have to mention this legally. When it says, people whose minds may be close to this idea are the ones in charge of society, the people who are actually in charge of society are reptilians.
Right, exactly.
Which are cold-blooded, so naturally they would not want to be frozen.
Yes. Caveat. Obviously. We are a history podcast. Someday a special status and a new label for suspension patients, the don't-know-yets, the undead, metabolically challenged, the deanimates, which is especially popular in Australia.
The corny joke.
A new label will be required, but before then we will need to produce more research showing why such a status is deserved.
It's like, yeah, y'all, if you're going to be freezing people and thinking that people are going to be like, oh yeah, this completely new way of doing anything medical, if you have any hope that that's going to be expected, I would hope you would produce some modicum of new research. I would hope you would bring something to the table.
Yeah, just something.
So this viewpoint has caused Alcor to end up in some extremely questionable legal spats, particularly one involving a woman named Dora Kent. So Alcor, to their credit, has been fairly transparent about this whole scenario, so I'll let you read their version of the Dora Kent controversy, for lack of a better term.
The greatest crisis in the history of Alcor, and one of the major turning points of cryonics, began in December 1987, when 83-year-old Dora Kent was suspended. A retired dressmaker and a mother of longtime cryonics activist, Saul Kent, Mrs. Kent had been ailing for several years. When she came down with pneumonia and death seemed imminent, a fateful decision was made to bring her into the facility before she deanimated. This was medically sound, but politically pretty dicey, as events proved.
You think?
The suspension itself, a neuro or head only, was fairly routine, in some ways, in fact, the best ever, since there was no wasting time for transport. But afterward, the local coroner became interested, launched an investigation, autopsied the headless body, decided the mode of death was, quote, natural causes, reversed himself, demanded and was refused the head for autopsy, accused the Alcor team of murder, etc.
etc.
Alcor personnel who refused to disclose the location of this neuro patient when questioned were put in handcuffs and detained for several hours before being released. And this was but one incident in the long campaign of intimidation and harassment.
Yeah.
A long campaign of, oh, I don't know, following up on murders?
Yeah. I really watched Law and Order for the long campaigns of intimidation and harassment that they take out. Because legally, what they are being accused of is effectively killing a woman and putting her in a bunch of ice.
Yeah.
And that's the thing we talked about earlier. Legally, the United States government says that you have to be pronounced dead before you can be put on ice, which is because putting you on ice will kill you.
Yeah.
And they didn't just put her body on ice, they cut her head off.
Right.
So if she wasn't dead before, she was definitely legally dead after that. And then they put her head in ice.
Yeah, so I can understand this up to a point. She volunteered. She volunteered to have her body cryogenically frozen. But yeah, that's that whole head removal part, like, it's already a dice roll.
Yeah.
But this is rolling a lot more dice. I'm out of analogy for this. This is just crazy.
It's like fourth dimension D&D. You're rolling so many dice.
So many dice. yeah, just once you get into desecrating not bodies because they're not dead.
Because they're not dead.
She's dead. Definitely dead now. Like you said, cut her head off. That has killed people since the dawn of time.
Time immemorial.
Since at least the Middle Ages when we were chopping people's heads off all the time.
Guillotines.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
And there's kind of that Dr. Kevorkian bent to it where I could see how you would construe it as physician-assisted suicide.
Right.
If you're like, well, I don't want to be alive in this body anymore, so I want to be suspended. But instead of Kevorkian's thing where patients were asking to commit suicide, Dora Kent was like, I don't want to be alive in this body anymore. I want to accelerate my path to a new one. But since no outside observer was present at Dora Kent's death, it's unknown if she was able to be defined as legally dead at the time when her head was removed and placed in cryonic suspension. I guess legally dead of natural causes,
yeah,
as the coroner found. But again, if you look at this from Alcor's point of view, the people in the lab are going to be brought back to life, so they didn't kill her. They simply facilitated her being preserved at a fresher state instead of having to wait for her to die in a hospital and then transport her.
Sure.
Like they say in that paper, oh, this was actually the best one because we didn't have to ship it a super long time. It's really strange. And for what it's worth, no charges were ever filed by the state against Alcor. Mm-hmm. And they were also awarded damages for having their name kind of dragged through the mud as a result of this controversy, which is a pretty deserved controversy.
I would say so.
It would be tough, though, if you worked at Alcor at this time to get a different job after this happened.
Yeah.
I don't really know what you would put on your resume.
I don't know. How many people you think you can find on LinkedIn right now who put decapitation as something they have experience in?
Endorsed as a decapitationist. It almost sounds, and I don't want to use this term lightly, but it almost sounds a little bit like a cult. They're, to our definition, killing someone. but are saying, oh, no, 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 it's an in-between state that the culture as a whole doesn't accept or realize or something like that. Almost like Heaven's Gate, where they were like, yeah, we're going to drink this thing, but our spirits are going to leave our bodies and they're going to go connect with the UFO in the sky. And even though the majority doesn't understand that, we are not committing suicide. We're merely transferring to the next plane.
To be fair, though, there's no, as far as what we can see from this research, there's no indication that there's any manipulation on the part of the cryonics professionals. That they're very upfront with, like, we think there is a good chance, but we don't know.
Yeah.
So it's not like a cult where you are
brainwashed,
deceiving people for your own personal gain if you're a cult leader or something like that. There's not like the same level of manipulation, not even necessarily misinformation.
Yeah.
My personal sticking point is, yeah, the removal of heads.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy for me to laugh at it because I'm far enough removed from it. Like a head removed from a corpse. But it's just like, freezing a body is one thing, but freezing it and assuming that you can still revive it even if you disconnect the head from the body, it's just absurd. I see the connection you're drawing with cults. I don't necessarily agree with that particular connection, but I just think this strikes me as more just absolutely insane.
It's tough. There is some scientific research that has corroborated some of these ideas. It happened long after we started freezing people, which I don't know what those first few people were apparently just going in blind and being like, yeah, I guess this is going to work. But scientists have frozen mammals. We have frozen mice and been able to revive them to a point of brain activity and some electrical motor function. So it's proven that you can be frozen in a well-preserved enough state that you are able to be, I guess not you, because you implies a human, but we have been able to revive animals to a point where we can detect electrical activity in their brain, which is fascinating. And it hasn't really been replicated a ton, so the circumstances probably have to be pretty exact. But I don't know if we'll see it within our lifetime, but I guess we'll get there when we get there.
So as skeptical as I definitely am, maybe you are too.
I'm pretty skeptical of this.
As skeptical as we are, I guess in the grand scheme of things, there have been crazier things that have happened in the scientific world. Maybe not, though.
This is pretty crazy. Yeah.
But I see the logic in it that, you know, maybe we will stumble across some way to revive bodies and then... Thank God that we, like, kept these people around then.
Yeah.
How else would we have known if we didn't try?
Yeah, it's not the freezing that really bothers me so much. Like, people have been falling in big things of snow for a long time. It's the hope that somehow we're going to wake up one day and be able to completely reverse all aging effects, cancer, muscular degeneration,
yeah,
brain function that you lose as you get older. We're somehow going to be able to reverse all of this and give you apparently similar quality of life to what you experienced before. That seems like the more insurmountable task that cryonics has to face here.
Yeah. We'll see, I guess.
I guess. If you want to see personally, we're not that far away from Michigan. The Cryonics Institute in Michigan will do the neuropreservation for about $35,000.
Okay.
I mean, that still comes in about 3 times the cost of a traditional funeral and burial, but... I mean, theoretically, you'd be saving money because if you were revived, you would never have to go through a funeral.
No, I'm going to suspend my disbelief and entertain the possibility of being revived.
Uh-huh.
Still not worth it because you're paying to get frozen and you're paying for a funeral. You kidding me? That's so much money spent on just being dead at the end of it.
Do you think if you were really into cryogenics... But your family wasn't. Do you think the second they put you in that tube, they'd be like, all right, we're going to have a real funeral because he's definitely dead now? Or do you think they'd be like, well, he thinks he's going to wake up, so we can't really have a funeral. Otherwise, there'd be a lot of egg on our face.
Well, I guess, are they going to get cryogenically frozen?
If you weren't there, it'd be a tough call to make.
Yeah. All kinds of big questions with this.
How bad do you think the future would have to get for you to wake up and regret being frozen? Like, I imagine no one gets frozen and is like, I don't know about this. I imagine you got to be pretty hype. You're like, I'm going to wake up and there's going to be flying cars and we're going to have space cities and it's going to be rad.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. I wonder how bad it has to get for you to wake up and be like, oh, man, This is a bummer.
Not to get all soapboxy about it, but I just kind of feel like so much of life is learning to be content with the things that you have and acknowledging that there are some things that you may not get within your lifetime, but yeah. Do you really need those things to be happy and content and lead a successful life? And I think that hanging any importance on being able to see the future and live during it, I don't know, it's just, do you really need that? Do you really need to be around for a few more years? Who's to say that you can do that and not eventually die anyway shortly after that?
Yeah.
You know, all signs point to we're all going to go at some point. You're just prolonging the inevitable more than anything.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the weird lines about cryonics is that this is not a way to embrace death as something that exists in the world and something that should be accepted as a natural part of life. It's a way to completely stave off death and prevent it from ever happening, because I guess the thought is if we can reverse aging to someone who is, you know, 92 years old and has died a natural death, then we should just be able to keep that process up and theoretically they would never die. I don't know. It just seems like a whole weird can of worms that I don't really get a lot of the philosophical implications of. But if you're listening to this and you plan on being cryogenically frozen, or someone in your family has and you are comfortable emailing us about that, please do. We would love to hear that.
Yeah.
That's really all the content I had, besides the fact that I would be extremely excited to hear from anybody who has firsthand experience with this or knows anyone who has been frozen. So, Dorian, how about you give them the ways that they can contact us?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty skeptical, but I'm open to having my mind changed on this. So, yeah, it would be really cool to hear from people.
Yeah.
If you want to do that, you can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us on the Twitter, @predeadboys. We've got a Facebook group that has been steadily growing. Just search Pre-Dead Boys Podcast on Facebook.
Growing like the thing.
Yeah.
Like the Kurt Russell dog thing.
Ugh. Oh, man. That is one of my favorite movies ever. Don't get me started on that. It's for another episode. Hey, if you want to support us, you can support us with money by going to our Ko-Fi website. Ko-Fi. It's ko-fi.com/predeadboys. Leave us a $3 or more tip, and that would just cover our hosting fees, recording equipment, possible field trip to Detroit to visit a cryonics facility.
The squat oak and brick building with a small couch in it.
Yeah. Not a beautiful building, but we still want to check it out. We would appreciate that. Hey, you can leave us a review on iTunes. Max, we got a few more reviews.
That's great.
You want to hear them?
I do. Again, I can't see them, and it frustrates me that people are saying good things about me, and I have no idea that they are, because I'm such a narcissist that I need that validation.
Well, I can show you, or I can read them out loud.
So yay! Our listeners can hear.
Thanks to Jason of Ecto for giving us a 5-star review. He says, "Listen now! You should be subscribed to the show!" It's in exclamation points, so I hope I reflected the enthusiasm. We appreciate that enthusiasm. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Jason.
I love this next one. It is by Legitimate Customer.
They're not even buying anything from us. It's free. Our customer.
It is titled, "Great Boys, 5 stars. he or she or they say, "Both enjoyable to listen to these guys and a bit eye-opening to the world of death outside of our own cultures." We really appreciate that. That's definitely something we're shooting for on this project. Cool. So thank you guys so much. Our intro and outro music is the song "About Time" by the band Brat Curse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. And I think that's going to do it for us. We're going to go find a freezer to just shove ourselves into and hope that we get revived for a better tomorrow with flying cars and rivers of LaCroix. Isn't that right, Max?
I'm going full Encino Man on this one. I'm going to be Brendan Fraser.
Oh, what do they say? The Wheezing the Juice?
I have never seen Encino Man. Honestly, I just know the plot. Sorry.
I got to go tell Max about Wheezing the Juice. We'll talk to you guys later. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
See ya.
episode of the Every edition of this podcast ends with me getting yelled at for not having seen a movie.
Yeah, I feel like I had to kind of go to your defense about Star Wars, and I was like, hey, back off my friend. He doesn't have a bunch of time to piss away like the rest of us do.
He's not a fucking nerd.
You are a nerd, just in different ways. We're all nerds about something.
Fucking death nerd.
Yeah. Death Nerds. A podcast.